James is not singing there, it's almost rapping. So basically it's more new metal than the entire Saint Anger, except it sounded great.
Hi friends, it's Andriy Vasilenko and welcome to Metallic Geek, where we are overanalyzing our favorite band. Death Magnetic came up when I got into Metallica, and so it has a special place in my heart. But it has its flaws, and not only in the production. Even though the riffs are great, but they could have made a bit more, neater compositions, let alone not screwing up the sound. So yeah, that was a brief summary of what I think about the album. If you wanna a bit more lengthy version of it, about 6 minutes, go to YouTube channel Metallic Geek. I made a video about it, which is basically an intro to this episode where I'm gonna discuss these songs one by one. What I think about them, why they are good or why they are could have been better. All the links to the video and all the other stuff I mentioned in the podcast are in the show notes. Click the link in the description of this episode or go to metalgeek.com/36. And one more thing before we start going through the songs. I promise the next episode to be about Metallica family tree, the bands that are related to Metallica, their cousins, brothers and so on. I promised it in my Black Album unboxing, and where I discovered this family tree drawn. It's a very fun topic. I have recorded this podcast, but in order for it to go live, I need to draw the family tree, and it takes time. I haven't got to making it, but the episode has been recorded, so it's gonna be next, I hope. And the family tree drawing will be on metalgeek.com on the respective page of the respective episode. Alright, get comfy and enjoy the discussion. It is clear from the very first minute of the album, Death Magnetic is no Loads and no Saint Anger. Fight Fire, Battery and Blackened got a long-awaited successor. That was just your life. So welcome back the old-school, epic, multi-layer build-up intros, dropping into a chainsaw type of riff. And this song in general was the best choice for the album opener. It got solid riffs, tight composition, no fluff, it runs on one breath. Plus, it is the first time the fans heard a solo since 1999, I think, and a full harmony since 1991, because Loads did not have those kind of epic harmonies. And also, it is Robert's studio debut, although we don't really hear him much. Again, probably old habit of mixing. One thing gives out, it's not 100% like old Metallica. It's borderline rapping vocals. I have calculated that in the second verse, James spits 72 words or 91 syllables in just 18 seconds, or about 4 words and 5 syllables per second. So yeah, eat that, rappers! Now is the end of the line. If Frankenstein was a song, it would be like this one. It has great riffs in the core, but the composition feels rather forced. Just look at the part just before the middle section. They were like, probably, man, it's too early for the interlude, so let's just throw in as much stuff as we can. The intro, which is badass, is a head detached from the Death Is Not The End demo from 2006. The song's biggest highlight to me, and the distortion basically gives some Beltos vibe, yeah? But then the pre-verse riff is straight up from Sanitarium. And the verse vocal line is basically said but true drank too much coffee, something like that. Hey! The clean interlude is alright, though falls short of those from Master or even Misery, and the solo is the laziest Kirk's job on the album, and it's what even more than Sandman's. Other than that, it's a decent track. Metallica simply must have been too tired of remaking it over and over again, you hear it. The riffs were all over the demos, but at least the riffs are fun to play. Broken Beaten Scarred. Another song with huge potential that fell victim to Metallica's composing, although I still like it more than the previous one. The main riff just radiated huge potential out of it, but the guys seem to be struggling to develop it.
You can hear the difference between the demo and the final version. And still, the riff did not fully click, like I like to say. There's a great clip from The Making of Death Magnetic where Lars tries to tweak it and Gerg says something like, "No, the note doesn't work here, man." But what's Metallica's excuse for not using the much badasser chorus from the demo? Let the scars tell a story, pay your dues. Let the scars tell a story, born to lose. Maybe it was too much of Saint Anger there? Yeah, the song in general has some of that character. It has some unfinishedness, but yeah. Great song anyways. By the year 2008, some fans might have accepted the fact that Metallica would not or could not write another epic number 4 ballad. The Unforgiven was their last true classic ballad, and one was the last one to have some, you know, speed and thrash metal in it. Death Magnetic fixed that. Not only did Metallica bring a new real ballad to the table, but combine all of the number 4s in it. It's the day that has come. It begins like Fade to Black and the Unforgiven, the Arpeggios, and even some Unforgiven 2, but it ends like Sanitarium and 1. And those riffs are at par with the classic ones, especially the main arpeggio. It has a melody going higher, alternating with bassy notes below, like in Unforgiven, but without the need for another guitar to emphasize the melody that Kirk does. Brilliant and emotional phrasing, best on the album, and it came as an aftermath, actually. The chord progression, maybe written by Kirk Hammett, spawned the main arpeggio and the heavy chorus, probably with the hand of J.S. Hetfield. In the making of, we can see Kirk trying to come up with the low arpeggio on the chords, and the next shot shows James playing it his own way. So you see that Kirk brought the progression, the basic idea, and James got several riffs out of that that became classics, and you would think that the entire thing is written by James, but it came maybe from Kirk. But actually, find the proof that Kirk wrote that na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Speaking of starting with chords, in a Load Era interview, I think it was Art of James Hetfield book, he says that the best riffs come when you have a progression first, the chords. So yeah, there we have the perfect example, The Day That Never Comes. All Nightmare Long, a track that did not make Saint Anger, because it was even not that good for the album, but became the hit of Death Magnetic that everyone was losing their mind about, like the thrash Metallica is back. But they did not just take the old Saint Anger demo and put it on Death Magnetic. The basic idea was there, but it was completely thrashed up. They still could not pull it off in E standard tuning. The original was C sharp, so the compromise was drop D. This song is very special in the sense that it has like a decade long making, basically. It's a great slice of the history of Metallica, how they came from the early 2000 vision of their music to the Back to the Roots. It has several phases, and I wrote an entire article about it, about All Nightmare Long and how Metallica switched from Saint Anger to Death Magnetic. Cyanide. Many would agree is the weakest one in the bucket. Every song of Death Magnetic had at least one ball-clenching moment. Cyanide is just alright all the way through. It's fun to play, it's easy, but it falls short composition-wise, you know. Maybe it's all because the main riff, and the main riff must set the tone of how cool the song will be. It starts off evil, its descending move on open E. Na 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 na. It's really ooh. But the tail of it is rather a beat. Da 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 da. My favorite analogy of how the main riff of the song must go, it's like, it's gotta be like jab, jab, right hook. Off. But in Cyanide, it's like jab, jab, and smack. And yeah, the intro, which is SOS, Morse code as a riff. I still cannot decide whether it's clever or cheesy.
The Unforgiven 3, the sequel that no one wanted, no one but James. He had to fight for making it on the record. The idea was just too personal. It was his story that needed a conclusion. Forgiveness. And that makes Unforgiven 3 so... it's true art. So pure and genuine. Despite arguably being musical inferior to the first two Unforgivens. Unforgiven 2 was essentially a popped-up, mainstreamed version of the original. Not all accepted it at first, but over the years, it's grown on most. The third sequel needed to be different, but still keep the spirit, you know? And so they brought new key, E instead of A. And the only feature that makes it connected to the original Unforgiven is this unusual scheme of heavy verse, soft chorus. How could he know this new dawn's light? It's one of the Unforgiven trademark features, alongside the reversed horn intro. And funny that part 2 kept the horn intro, but flipped the structure. It was heavy, chorus, soft verse. And part 3 did the opposite. And that was one of the biggest complaints about the song. Not to mention other things such as not being in the key of A minor and just not feeling relevant in general. It's been a long time, maybe it's not... they should have not done it. The song does not have the right to bear the name. Some did think that way. But I'm sure that if it had a different title, not Unforgiven, as many people would complain, why is it not called Unforgiven? You missed an opportunity to make Unforgiven 3. So James did the right thing defending the song as it was. As well as not making it too similar to the predecessors. If they simply copied the original blueprint, then it would be way more forced. Also, James playing piano in the intro is like a throwback to his childhood, when he was taking piano lessons. Kirk's solo is good, as for not having Bob Rock around to push him. And the interlude, that escalating part, just gives you damn chills. I would even say that the riffs, if to drop nostalgia, even better than the original Unforgiven. The Unforgiven 3 is a brilliant piece of music, whether viewing it as part of the classic trilogy or as a standalone track. Is there to you a song from the recent Metallica stuff that you think that if it was released in the 80s, it would have been a massive hit like Master of Puppets? To me, it's the Judas Kiss. Man, I keep telling that the riff from the chorus is one of the best Metallica riffs ever. Bow down, surrender unto me, submit infectiously. And the chorus is so catchy, but not like mainstream catchy, not sellout catchy. And in general, the song's style seems like a horizon Metallica should explore more. It's a very unique track with all the Metallica signature features, but I think it's the only track on the album that does not have a harmony. Yeah, but did you notice that? It really keeps you engaged all the way through, even though it's over 8 minutes, man. But it grips your balls and you just go from one chorus to another expecting that, just expecting another fix of riff dope. It is also a track that has something from Saint Anger, and I believe the riff, it was written in the Presidio. I lost the interview when I read it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's the story like All Nightmare Long. That was not a fit for Saint Anger, but they managed to pull it off and make it a new Metallica classic. Although, again, it has its flaws, it could have been a bit shorter, but not too much. Yeah, Judas Kiss lacks the distinct main riff. The chorus riff is not the main riff, it's not usually the case. It should be after the chorus, the bridge riff. And in this one it's... Does it work as a song's engine? Maybe it does, but I love the song. Hope Metallica takes it off the shelf. Suicide and Redemption. Don't listen to the people. This is a brilliant instrumental. Maybe a bit overstretched at the end, probably for making it 10 minutes, that's the longest Metallica track ever, just for the sports interest. And maybe it is slightly boring in the beginning after intro, but it could be justified that it just accumulating momentum and hype to be discharged in the section B. Didn't Cthulhu and Telluride do the same? And we can draw more parallels with the classic Metallica instrumental, such as a bass intro like in Ryan. But Suicide does not simply copy the instrumentals, though. It could have been better. Despite the fact that the first half of the instrumental seems a bit boring, man, does the second half redeem it? Pun intended. The melodic interlude and James Hetfield's solos just take the cake. The entire middle section is a perfect build-up that sends shivers down your spine. So, if you don't like Suicide Redemption, you probably just never passed the 4-minute mark. And finally, the closing track, My Apocalypse. Metallica needed the most reckless song to wrap the record up. My Apocalypse was Metallica's first real thrasher since 1988. So Damage and Dire Thief got their spiritual successor too. This track is 192 BPM. They could have pushed it up even to 200 to beat Dire Thief's 195 and thus for once step into the Slayer territory. And by the way, the demo of My Apocalypse was called 10 and it indeed landed as the 10th track on the album. Coincidence? Again, all the links to all the videos and articles I mentioned are in show notes, metalgeek.com/36, or if it's clickable, in the description of this episode, if you're listening to it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, I'm not sure if it's clickable there. So if anything, metalgeek.com/36. If you want to support the show, just rate and review it on Apple Podcasts, and go to our website and join our Met Gang. It's like Met Club, but kind of underground. The next episode will be Metallica Family Tree, as I promised. Thanks for listening, it's Andriy Vasilenko, and hear you next time, friends.